We continue our learning of the Nishmas David ben Menachem Yishem and Chaim Yaakov ben Pinchas Leah Wern ben Vavas for Perek Yud Mishnah Zayin. Shnei Achin, two brothers, Echad Ani veEchad Asher. One is poor and one is rich. The issue here is, as the Mishnah says, V'iniach lahen avihin merchatzu beisabad. The father left for them as part of the Yerusha a bathhouse or an olive press. The problem is that the usher has can afford to buy olives and use the wine press. The ani cannot afford to do that. What the ani would like to do is have this rented out, and that way they can split the profit. So the Mishnah says like this: Asa on the sachar, if the father used the merchatzu or the beisabad for renting out to gain a profit from it, then hasachar lamsa, then they would rent it out now that they received it, the Yerusha, the father passed away, and they'll split that profit. But as on la'atzman, but or some have the girsa la'atzmo, if the father used this for himself and the family and did not rent it out, so then hare ha'ashir or melani, the ashir has the right to tell the ani, we're not renting this out and we're not splitting the profits. Kachlo chavadim v'yirchatzu v'merchatz, go buy yourself slaves so they can wash themselves in the bathhouse. Or kachlo chzeisim luvov asem v'veisabad, or buy yourself some olives and you can use the olive press to press them. But of course he can't afford to do that. He has no use for it. He would love to be able to rent it out, but because the father didn't do so, the usher has the right to tell the ani, you know, we're not renting it out, we're not splitting the profits, I'm going to use the merchatz and the beis habad the way it is, and you find a way to do that, and if you can't, okay, so there's no, you have no use for it. Shnaim shayubir achas, you have two people living in the same city, Shem Echad Yosef ben Shimon, and Shem Acher Yosef ben Shimon, they had the same name. So what are we afraid of? We're afraid that if they, one would lend money to the other, we don't know who the malve is, who the lova is, who paid back, who didn't pay back. They cannot have a loan document, one to the other. Each one can make the following kind of claim. This shtar was really in my hand originally. I lent you money, and after you paid me back, I returned you the shtar. You think you're the malve, and you're demanding I owe you $100. No, not at all. But we're both Yosef ben Shimon. Really, this was my shtar. I was the malve, you were the love, and you know why you're holding on to the shtar? Because you paid me back. I gave you back the shtar. I don't owe you any money. V'lo acher yachol lahotzi alein shtarchov, nor can we have anyone else lend them money, because they're two Yosef ben Shimon's, because each person can say, when someone comes to Yosef ben Shimon A and says, hey, you owe me $100, says, no, that's not me, it's the other Yosef ben Shimon who owes you money. So, Nimsa le'echad ben shtarosav shtaroshel Yosef ben Shimon paru. Well, let's say another case. Let's say a person borrowed money from both of the Yosef ben Shimon's, and there was a shtar for both of them. Now, each Yosef ben Shimon's holding on to a shtar that this guy Baruch, let's say, borrowed money, $100 from each of them. So, and the Love has a shova, let's say a receipt that a shtar of Yosef ben Shimon was already paid back. So he paid back one of them. We assume that both of the shtaros have been paid back and neither of them are able to claim money from this guy because he has a receipt that says that he paid Yosef ben Shimon back. So what do we case Yasu? So what do we do? These people maybe want to borrow money. So how do we do that when we have two people with the same name? So says the Mishnah, Yishaleishu, very simple. Write three generations, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. And this way the other guy is Yosef ben Shimon ben Baruch, let's say. And this way you'll know. But the grandfather is, you'll know the difference between the two people. You should write the full three generations in the star. Let's say both of their names are Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov in the same city. So yeah, if you're the different cities, so you have different cities written in the location of the star, so that's not a problem. If you have two Yosef ben Shimon's in the different cities, but here we're talking about the same city, and now we have three generations, so Yikasu Simon. You should write some type of sign, let's say the tall Yosef ben Shimon, the short Yosef ben Shimon, the Mayum Suman, let's say they're both tall, both short. Yikasu Kohen, one's a Kohen, so write that he's a Kohen. The Gemara says, and if both are Kohanim, write the fourth generation, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov ben Yitzchak, and hopefully the other fourth generation of the other person is different. Homer livno shtar ben shtarosai parua. A person says to his son, you know, one of the shtaros that I'm holding on to, meaning he's a malve, he lent money to a lot of people, he says, but one of these shtaros was already paid back, I should not be collecting that money anymore. Veini yodea, Ezehu. I don't know who it is. The Lova obviously believed me that I wouldn't collect the money, or else the Lova would, of course, demanded the shtar back. But I know that one of these shtaros is Paru. I already paid back. I didn't return him the shtar. I don't want to be punished by collecting money from someone who I shouldn't be collecting from. But I don't remember which shtar was already paid back. Shtaros kulam prun. So then we have to assume that the shtaros, all of the shtaros he had, are paid back, because each Lova can make the time of that. I was the one who, of course, if Lova remembers he didn't pay back, that's very nice. But every Lova has the ability to make a time to make a claim. Oh, my shtar is the one that was already paid back, and this Malve can't collect from anybody. Nimtza le'echad Shum Shnayim. Let's say you have a case where someone had two shtaros on one lova, which means one lova borrowed, let's say Shimon borrowed twice from Reuven, and there were two separate shtaros. He borrowed last year, he borrowed $100, and this year borrowed $500, whatever it is, and he didn't. And here we have where we assume that one of them is Paru. Hagadol Parua, the Hakatan Eno Parua. We assume that the shtar which has the greater amount was paid back, and the shtar that has the lesser amount was not paid back. That is that's the assumption we can make, that we can assume that he had paid back, since the Malve doesn't know which one was paid back. He knows one of them is paid back. We assume that the larger amount was paid back. Hamalves Chaver Ali De Orev, and Orev is the guarantor. So here, a person lends money to someone where this Orev, this guarantor, accepted Acharai's responsibility to pay back the loan if the Lova defaults on the loan. Lo yipara min ha'arev. The Malveh is not permitted to collect from the Arev, from the guarantor, until he demands the money from the Lova, brings him to court. Based in is Mechayev the Lova to pay, but the Lova doesn't have any money. Then he can come to the Arev. Only at that point. Vim Amar, but let's say the Malveh said originally Al Menashe et para mimisha eretzer. When he gave the money, he said, and there was an Arev, a guarantor signed, so he said, I'm just telling you, I'm lending you the money within the condition, the stipulation, that I can collect from wherever I want. I can collect from you, the lover. I can collect from the Arev, the guarantor. Then he param in Arev. Then he has the right to collect the money from the Arev and doesn't have to go to the Love and bring the Love to court. The Gemara says that this is a chistur mechasra. There are words missing in the Mishnah. We should amend the Mishnah in the following way and make the following qualification. When do we say that even if you said in the beginning, Almanas, I want to collect from whoever I want, the Lova or the Arev, that's only where the Lova has no nechasim, has no property at all. Avom yesh nechasim lelova, but if the Lova has nechasim, has possessions from which the Malve can collect his loan, lo yipara min Arev. Hey, he shouldn't collect from the Arev even if he says Almanas, that I can collect from whoever I want. You go to the Lova first. But the Kablan, what we call an Arev Kablan, which is where this is the Kablan, is where someone tells the Malve originally, give a halva to this friend of mine, and I will pay you. Then afal pisha yesh nechasim lelova yiparam in a kablon. That Arif kablon, that type of the guarantor, then even the lelova has nechasim, you go to the kablon. From Shimon Kamli Alomir, im yesh nechasim lelova beinkach uveinkach. Lo yiparam in Arif. He says, even in Arif kablon, if the lelova has nechasim, you cannot collect from the Arif, you go to the lelova first. We don't follow half a Rav Shim Gamliel. V'chein ha'yam Shim Gamliel omer ha'orev le'isha b'ksuv asal. Let's say you have a case where someone is a guarantor to pay back a woman's ksuva. The husband owes the wife the ksuva, let's say the 200 zuz, and someone is the guarantor and says, if the husband doesn't pay, I'll pay back. I'll pay back for the husband on behalf of the husband. V'ha'yam bala migorsha. And the husband is now divorcing his wife. He has no nechasim. So the orev, the guarantor, is going to have to pay the wife the ksuva because he's divorcing her now. Yidirenahana. The orev should not pay the value of the ksuva until the husband makes a neder that his wife can no longer get hana from him. Why? Because if he makes that neder, he can't take her back. Why do we want him not to be able to take her back after he divorces her? Because we're afraid shemayasu kenunya al nechasim shel zeh. We're afraid the husband and the wife are conspiring together on the possessions of the arev. And the plan is, we know the arev is the guarantor to pay the ksuva. So the husband says to the wife, listen, I'm going to divorce you. The arev is the guarantor is going to pay you the ksuva. And then I'll take you back and we'll share the ksuba money together. V'yachzer sishta, we're afraid they'll conspire, make this kanunya together on the nechasim of the ari. V'yachzer sishta, and he'll take back his wife. So that is something more we want to avoid. Now the Gemara says that the arev, that in fact a regular arev, an arev stam of a ksuba, is not mishabed himself. The fact that he's a guarantor, all it means is that he wants to do a mitzvah to help out. If a husband can't pay, he wants to make sure the wife gets his money. But it doesn't really have in mind to pay for that arvus. Where do we assume that this is true, that an arev for an ishto b'ksuv asa in fact does have to pay? And of course the husband has to, in order to avoid this conspiracy, we have to make sure that he makes a neder, his wife can't count enough for him. But under what circumstances do we assume an arev really is a guarantor, legally for a woman's ksuv? That's a father regarding the son. The son is going to get married, and this guarantor, the father, says, "Listen, I want my son to get married. I'm going to guarantee that he may not have make any money right now. He's sitting and learning, let's say. But I, the father, I'll make sure to pay that ksuva in the circumstances. In fact, if you get divorced, let's say he's an arev kablan to the ksuva. Let's say the father says, marry my son, and I will pay you that ksuva. So the Gemara has a machlokes if he is mishabing himself in such a case or not. Oh, so this means like this. If the father says a guarantor on the son's ksuva, so that we assume he's definitely an arev and he would have to pay that ksuva. What about an arev kablan for a ksuva? Not father and a son. An arev kablan, meaning someone says, "I want you to marry my friend, and I'll guarantee from the very beginning I'll pay the ksuva." So an arev kablan, there's a machlokes. Rambam rules that he is mishabi, that is considered an arev because he's an arev kablan. However, that's a machlokas. But a regular arev, where it's not a father for a son, and it's not an arev kablon, it's not from the very beginning, you can come to me, so then we assume that type of arev is not going to be an effective arvus when it comes to a ksuva. Perak Yud, Mishnah Ches, the final Mishnah of the Masechta. Hamal ves chaveru b'shtar. Here you have a case where Reuben lends money to Shimon, and they write a shtar. So the Mishnah says, "Gov em minichasim shubadim." If the lover, Shimon, defaults on the loan, Reuven has the right to collect from nechasim shubadim, from mortgage property. What is the chiddush of the Mishnah? So this is something we learned in the beginning of the Metzia, which is known as achrayus tois sofer hu. Literally means achrayus, a lien on properties, is considered a mistake of the scribe. What does that mean? It means that when it comes to a shtar, take our ksuvas for example. So the ksuvas say that a husband is obligated to pay this amount to the wife upon his passing or upon divorce, and everything achrayus tar ksufsa nedodenim tosef teda, the achrayus, there's an achrayus that he has to pay, that's mortgaged, all of his properties are mortgaged to pay the ksuva, v'afilum in glima dal kaspoy, the ksuva says, even my shirt off my back, everything he has is mishubad, there's a lien upon it to pay back that ksuva. But what if that were not written in the shtar? Would we say that, well, then there's no nechasim, there's no shibu nechasim? So the Mishnah here teaches us, no. We assume that achrayus, the fact that there's a lien on the properties, if it's not written in the shtar, that's a ta'a sofer. That's a mistake of the scribe. It should have been there. And therefore, it's built in. Even if it's not written in the shtar, the mere fact that we have a shtar assumes achrayus nechasim. That's what the Mishnah means. A person who lends money to his friend, he's able to collect from mortgage properties, assuming that the lover doesn't have any properties to give. So he's able to go to any properties that were sold from the date of the shtar and onward, he has the right to collect those properties, even if there was no mention in the shtar of a lien on property. Then Mishnah says, "Al yedei edim gove minichasim b'nei chorin." If a person lends money to his friend in front of edim, there's no shtar, so he cannot collect from nechasim mishubadim, properties that were sold to others. He can't confiscate them from the buyers, but he can only collect from b'nei chorin nechasim, possessions, property that's in the hands of the lover right now, not nechasim mishubadim. The Gemara explains, according to Ula, who we follow, that what we call shibud d'oraisa, which means that a shibud of the nechasim of the lover, or lien on the properties of the lover to pay back the malveh, is a din d'oraisa. It's learned from the pasuk in Devarim Chav Dalet, "Vo'ish asher atono shebo," pasuk kuseitze, "yotzi elechas ha'avot." a person we have a malveh, there's potential shibun chasim, there's collateral. In this case, it happens to be speaking about a movable object that's considered collateral, but the same thing would be true when it comes to karka, that we assume that there's a shibun on not only movable objects, but even on karka as well. So if that's true, then even if you don't write a shtar, if shibud is oraisa, if we assume that there's a lien on the properties, movables and property and karka of the loveh to pay back the malveh, that's dindo raisa. That would be true even if you don't write a shtar. That would be anytime you make a loan, whether it's a milva b'shtar or a milva alpeh, you should maybe collect from nechasim b'shubadim. So why is it then that the chachamim have said that a milva alpeh, where the loan does not have a shtar, he cannot collect from nechasim b'shubadim? If it's a dindo raisa, it should be effective. So the answer is because if you don't have a shtar, there's no kol. No kol means it's not publicized. And we're afraid that what's going to happen if it's not publicized, that a loan took place. So I want to come and buy this house from someone. I don't know. There's no shtar, so it's not publicized that this person actually who's selling me the house owes someone a lot of money. So I buy the house, and lo and behold, someone comes and confiscates it. The malveh, I had no idea that this seller was owed a lot of money. But something written in the shtar is publicized. That's something that the lukuchos, potential buyers, should know about the properties of this loveh, because it was written in the shtar, and therefore we can uphold the din of shibud d'oraisa when it comes to a milveh b'shtar, just not a milveh alpeh. Then the Mishnah says, "Hotzi alav ksav yado shehu chayav lo." If we have literally the handwriting of the loveh that he owes money, which means he has a shtar, and it has the signing of the loveh. He signed his name on a shtar that says that he owes money, but there are no edim there. A typical shtar has two edim. There are no edim here, but the loveh has his signature that he owes $100. So gove minichasim b'nei chorin. The Mavik can only collect from Nechasim Nechorin, literally free properties, not Nechasim Bishubadim, not enslaved properties, not for properties that have been sold, which means that we treat this shtar, since there are no Edim Musan in it, like a Milve Alpeh. Some claim that when it says Hotzi Olav Ksav Yado, it means that the Lovel wrote the shtar with his own handwriting. So-and-so, son of so-and-so, Chayev to Ruvain, I, Shimon Ben Yaakov, I'm chayev to Reuven $100, even if he didn't sign his name. The mere fact that it's written with his handwriting, that is reason enough for Reuven to be able to collect from Nechasim B'nei Chorin, from free properties, properties that are in Shimon's possession right now, not properties that he had sold, because this is not a real shtar. Then the Mishnah says, Orev Hayotze La'achar Chitum Shtaros. We spoke about the Orev, the guarantor, before in the previous Mishnah. Here we have an Orev who, after the Edim had already signed on the Shtahalva on the loan document, the Orev writes on the document, I, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, I'm an Orev, I'm a guarantor for the Lover. So, Govim in Chasim B'nei Chorin. So, the halach is that the Malveh can collect from B'nei Chorin free properties of the Orev. And why only free properties? Because since the Edim didn't sign on the guarantor, on the Aravus, the Edim signed before the Oregon came into the picture, so the Aravus, his willingness to pay if the Lova defaults is only a Milva Alpeh, and if let's say the Lova doesn't have money, has no properties at all, so you can go to the Arev, but only B'nei Chorin, only free properties of the Arev, not a Chasa Mishubadim. Maiseh Balefnei Rabbi Yishmael, in a case where there was an Arev, who wrote his guarantee after the Edim had already signed the Shtar, and Rabbi Shmuel said, "Govim in the Chasim Bnei Chorin." The way we just explained, he can only collect, the Malveh can only collect from the free properties of the Arev, because the Arev only signed his name after the Edim were there. Had he put his name on the star before the Edim, before the Edim signed, then the Edim signed on that guarantee. So then, if the Lover doesn't have money, so you could go to the Arev, even to the Arev's Nechasim Shubadim. There's a lien even on the Arev's property. That's Rabbi Shmuel says, as we said in the Mishnah. Amar lo Benana, so Benana said to Rabbi Shmuel, Eino gove lo min chasim shugadim lo min chasim deichor. Benana says he doesn't have a din of an Arev at all, as we will explain. So according to him, if an Arev only puts his name on the star after the Edom sign, he's not an Ariv at all. And the Mala can't go to the Ariv to collect the loan even from free properties of the Ariv. So Amar Lo, so Rishbel said to Benanas Lama, why can't the Malve collect from at least the Chasim B'nei Chorin, at least the free properties of the Arev? Amar Lo, I'll tell you why. You have someone who literally is choking someone in the marketplace. It means that he's, a Malve comes to Lovin in the Shuk and says, hey, you owe me money, and he puts him in a hold and says, you pay me back. Then he's holding him by the neck. So the friend of the guy who's being choked says to this Malve, this guy who's choking his friend, Yehanachlo, leave him alone, and I'll pay you the loan. Potter, he doesn't have now, okay, so let him go. He says, okay, give me the money. He doesn't have to give him the money. The friend runs away, and that's all. Why does he have to pay? Because Shelo al emuna so hilvo. Because the money that was lent was not with the emuna, was not on the trust, was not with the guarantor of this person. Which means it wasn't because this person who promised I'll pay back the loan, he's doing this right now after the fact. So that's everyone agrees to the halacha. He didn't accept arvus. He only accepted it after the halva. That's not an ariv at all. Eleezu ariv shulchayev. When says bananas to Rabbi Shmuel, you would say an ariv is chayev. That's where the malva says halvehu, or the ariv rather says halvehu. Vani no silach. Lend him. You lend him the money. He tells the malva, and I'll pay. Now that's an ariv. Then chayev. Then he's chayev to pay. Shekein al emunaso hilvo. It was with that trust that the Malve lent the money. So that's Ben Anas' argument. Rabbi Shmuel obviously argues in Ben Anas. And he argues on Ben Anas even when it comes to the guy who's choking the guy in the marketplace. According to him, someone who becomes an Arev, the guarantor, even after the loan, he sees his friend is being choked, he says, okay, I'll pay you back. So then he actually is an Arev. And he's Meshuvah to the Malve. Maybe not from Chasim B'nei Chorin, but nonetheless, not from Chasim Meshuvadim, but from free properties, he certainly has to pay. And we follow Rabbi Shmuel's opinion according to Halacha, that even if a person becomes an Arev after the fact, after the Shtar is signed, he's considered an Arev. But that's only true. You can only become an Arev after the Halva if it's a kinyan that's made. Kano miyado, you make a kinyan sudar, pick up a handkerchief. At the time of a Halva, an Arev can become an Arev by having his name written in the star and the Edom signing afterwards, even without a kinyan that's made. Amar Rabbi Shmuel. Harotze, this is the end of the Mishnah, the end of Maseches Bava Basra. Harotze sheyachkim yachsok b'dinei mamonos. Person who wants to become wise, he should involve himself in the study of dinei mamonos. A person wants to obtain intelligence, wants to obtain wisdom and sharpen his brain, so he should study dini mamonos. Dini mamonos allows us to sharpen our heads. She'ein l'cha miktsoa b'torah gadol mihen. You don't have a profession, really, an area of wisdom that's greater than dini mamonos. She'ein kemayon ha-noveya. It's like a spring that continues doesn't stops, like a spring that continues to gush forth water. That's the way studying Dini Mamonos, Baba Basra, Baba Metzia, Baba Kam, etc. V'harot seshe yasuk b'dini mamonos. And Rabbi Shmuel continues, and if you want to involve yourself in Dini Mamonos, yishame sheshima benanas. You should. Benanas was the one who he argued with in the Mishnah. But nonetheless, he said, even though Rabbi Shmuel praises Benanas and his sharp head, Benanas' explanation as to why you're not considered an Arev when you become an Arev after the fact, just like the guy in the Shuk, even though Shmuel disagreed with him, nonetheless he knew he had a sharp mind, and certainly in the area of Dini Mamonos, and we follow his opinion, Rabbi Shmuel. Slick Maseches Bava Basra.